News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. I want to welcome to the program Tony Mesilla. He is the founder and he's a writer and operator at the Charlotte Ledger, which is a Substack publication. It comes to your email, as it does for me every day. The inbox is filled with all of their writings, and they track a lot of the development and growth and business-related stories in Charlotte. So welcome, Tony. How are you?
Doing great, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So first off, I got to ask you a little bit about the operation. So you're on Substack, which is, I understand it, that's where all of the print people go afterwards, like the radio people go podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a few different things. Either they go there after being laid off, or if you have a really big name and several hundred thousand Twitter followers, you basically take a lot of those followers, start up your own thing, and cash out that way. I'm more in closer to the first camp than the second camp.
So, all right. So, by way of background, I also happened to see just as I was getting on here that Tim Whitmire is working with you guys. Is that Tim from the AP from 20 years ago?
It is. I mean, yeah. You know, you put enough of these sort of old time news reporters like you and me and Tim Whitmire together. I mean, there are a bunch of us that are around. You know,
that's right.
But yes, we're working with a number of. Former Observer reporters, trying to do some good work in local news. As you know, Pete, I mean, it's been kind of decimated really over the last 10 or 15 years. And so we're just trying to kind of restore, some of the, just have reporters doing actual local news. I mean, it doesn't sound like a revolutionary concept, but, you know, we've lost a lot in Charlotte and really all over the country when it comes to local news.
So is it a model that can work? I know, like, you gave the different sort of templates of, like, the, you know, famous people with hundreds of thousands of followers. And, yeah, obviously they can make an opinion piece like Barry Weiss, Matthew Iglesias. They can make that model work. But from a local reporter standpoint, I mean, it's one of the things a lot of people don't know who reporters are. So when you go off on your own and you start this operation, can you make it a viable concern?
Well, that's what we're trying to prove, and I think we're showing that you can. You know, so I started the Charlotte Ledger a couple of years ago. I've been freelancing for a while. I worked for a national publication that had closed. I said, look, maybe I should give this a go and focus on local reporting. You know, I've lived in Charlotte for more than 20 years. I had some experience, and I was like, okay, there's a problem here. Maybe I can kind of solve it by just coming in and just doing reporting. And you know what that's like, calling people. It's hearing things and checking them out, and so that's what I did. So we started building that up. The model is fairly simple. Anybody who knows anything about Substack, it's basically a subscriber model. It's not as much an advertising model. It's just saying, listen, if we're giving you value, if this is something that's important to you, we just ask that you pay a modest amount. Our subscriptions are, you know, $9 a month or $99 a year, and we'll just give you, you know, we'll try and present it to you without bias. We're giving you facts. If you care about our community and you want to know more about it, that's kind of what we're about. And so it's been growing. It's been going well. It's not hockey stick growth, but it's been very consistent growth, and people are warming to it. So I think we're showing that kind of a model can work for local journalism.
So is there a focus on a particular, I don't say beat, but for lack of a better term, a beat. Like, is there a focus of the publication? Do you guys do? Because it seems like you do. I mean, you know, you have the transit component, but you also, I mean, you highlight stories from around the city from different publications as well. You'll put some rewrites of some of that stuff. So it does seem like more general news, but there does also seem to be a bit of a focus on sort of growth and development topics.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, my background is in business journalism, so we started just covering, business, and we've branched into a few different areas. We're sort of, we like to say our focus is kind of businessy, but not in a boring way. We're trying to cover stories that are engaging and are important to Charlotte, but if we see something that's off that beat in education or the arts or local politics, you know, we're not afraid to kind of do something on that too. But I would say it's sort of business oriented, but, you know, we're people who live in Charlotte and have kids in the school system and, you know, like to go out to eat and, you know, go to the movies or whatever. So, I mean, we'll cover anything, but it's a lot business oriented. Of course, in Charlotte, a lot of that is growth and development. You know, right. So we do cover the real estate industry, and so we're basically trying to cover things that other people aren't covering, and there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. So, and what was the old line in Charlotte? The business of Charlotte is business, or something like that, right? I mean, people used to say that stuff all the time.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's sort of known as a business city. You know, most people came here to take jobs. We still have a lot of people who grew up here, but you know, there are a lot of newcomers here too. Who came here from, you know, one of the banks or a tech company or what have you. So, you know, that's important. I think it's not covered as much as it should be, and so we're trying to, you know, give some attention to that.
So starting up your own operation like this, has it given you, you mentioned your background as a business reporter guy, has it given you a different kind of perspective when you talk to these business owners?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, it's a lot different, being a reporter, going out and talking to entrepreneurs and people in business, and, you know, where your only responsibility was to come back and, you know, write up an interesting or important story. And now it's like I'm doing that in addition to trying to run a business in which you have things I've never had to deal with before, strategy, marketing, managing people. There's a number of different aspects there. But, yeah, I think it is. It gives you good insight. Sure.
Yeah, different way to connect with these guys, because it's one of the things it always struck me talking to entrepreneurs, people who start businesses. The stuff that they talk about is usually the hardest parts of starting their companies. Those are the times that they look back on, and it's almost like this wistful nostalgia that they talk about.
Yeah.
And I could never understand why do they talk about such like these grueling hours that they were working, but it was like that was when they felt the most fulfilled and it was the most exciting, and it was because they were chasing the dream, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, if you're passionate about something and you really love it, you go into it and give it 100%, 110%, you know, cliche, 110%, right?
Impossible.
I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun too. And so I do see that in these entrepreneurs.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the content that you guys have been creating. And as coming back now to Charlotte after being away for 7 years or so, like I'm trying to get caught back up on it, which is really weird. And I think you kind of had a similar experience where you were running every single day on that treadmill. You knew a lot of stuff. You knew a lot of the people. You knew the issues. And then you kind of get away from it. And then you're coming back in and you're trying to catch back up. So you have some frame of reference, but you're trying to fill in the gap. So tell me in a minute or less, no, I'm kidding, but tell me what have I missed in 7 or 8 years?
Give you the Cliff Notes version, right? I mean, it's sort of, a lot of people like to pretend that what's going on here is new. It's really a variation on a theme. I mean, Charlotte has always been growing like gangbusters. I mean, it's really taken off in the last 10 years, but it's always been like that over the last number of decades. And so we're seeing that. I mean, some of the big storylines, obviously the growth of South End, which, you know, 15 years ago, it was a bunch of old industrial buildings, nothing much there, not a place you'd like to walk around at night. And now it's just one of the biggest, development areas in the Southeast. You know, you've got national companies coming in there building, you know, if you walked around there or been there, I mean, that's,
yeah,
mind-blowing. And you have that smaller versions of that really happening all over the city. Really, the urbanization of a lot of these other areas, South Park, Ballantyne, all the neighborhoods around Uptown, University City, Steel Creek. I mean, it's really taken off. So that's the 60-second version, Pete.
Yeah. All right. Well, not too much to cover there. You got a piece, yes, North Carolina is getting more crowded, and you had a piece about the planning director leaving the city of Charlotte to go to Greensboro. So I want to get into that, but I got to take a quick break. We'll have more with Tony Macia from the Charlotte Ledger. You can get the newsletter by going where to Substack, Tony?
Yeah, it's thecharlotteledger.com or charlotteledger.substack.com.
All right, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Joining me is Tony Macia. He's with the Charlotte Ledger, thecharlotteledger.com. It's a Substack newsletter, and you can subscribe. You also do a free version of it. It's a stripped-down version of it, which is also good to utilize every day, and they got tons of stuff in there. But I wanted to ask you about a couple of these stories about growth and development in Charlotte. So, first off, I know nothing about the planning director, the city's planning director, and I'm probably going to mangle his name, if not
right, that, I was going to say, that is one thing if you've been sort of out of it for a few years, trying to pronounce the name Taiwo Jioba is probably probably a little challenging.
Taiwo Jioba. Okay.
Jioba.
Jioba. Taiwo Jioba. Okay. He is, so just as you've now gotten to learn his name, he's leaving. He's going to Greensboro to be the city manager, and you wrote a piece a couple of days ago about his exit and how this is probably going to be seen, whether or not it will or will not, I'm not sure, but it'll be seen at least as by the development community as a good thing. Apparently, they don't really like this guy so much. Is that an accurate assessment?
That's probably the short version. I mean, you know, developers are like any other groups of people, and they don't speak, you know, in unanimity. But among developers, he was sort of a controversial figure in the sense that, you know, the city was putting in with the 2040 plan, created a vision that the developers perceived as being a little bit anti-development, and they also perceived that a lot of them, that they weren't being listened to by the planning department. So it's either he came in and was a visionary and got this thing through and stood up to developers who have ruled Charlotte for too long, that's one view, or he was ignoring the development community and was doing all these things and created a bunch of rules that are going to drive up the cost of housing. I mean, there's any number of ways to kind of look at it. The truth is probably, you know, somewhere in between, Pete.
Sure. So, and I'm trying to remember Charlotte's past planning directors. I'm thinking guys like Martin Crampton, I think was his name, right? And Walter Fields, I think was another, and Keith McVane. And all of these folks, they ended up going to work for developers after their stints at the city, right? But it doesn't seem like Taiwo's got that in his cards.
No, I don't think so. You know, he pushed through this 2040 plan, which passed the city council last summer in a close vote of 6-5. Which is remarkable given that the makeup of the city council is 9-2 Democrats. So you did have, I mean, there was some crossing of party lines there. A lot of these issues do cross party lines, but no, I mean, he pushed that through and took, you know, a lot of heat for it, but got it done. And so a lot of people say, well, that's something that it's good for the city that we're going to have clearer rules. But a lot of people say, well, it's, is this really so good? Let's look at some of those details, and Charlotte's going to be ironing out the details, you know, after he's in Greensboro. So his successor, interim planning director, her name is Allison Craig, probably a little bit easier to pronounce.
That is true. A little bit easier to pronounce, but I thought this was interesting. Do you ever watch the YouTube podcast that Tark Bukhari and Larkin Eggleston do together? Have you ever seen this?
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I listened to it as a pod. I don't think they've done as many episodes in the last few months as they did initially, but that's pretty interesting too. You know, because Bukhari had a pretty famous blow up with Jioba, over the summer. Was quoted in Axios Charlotte saying some very unkind things, profanity and the like. They sound like made up. But yes, I do listen to them. Do you check that out?
I did. Well, I was just curious because it sounded like Bukhari, he said that he had predicted that that the planning director, Jioba, was going to use the passage of the Uniform Development Ordinance as sort of his ticket to get punched to go to another city and run a whole city. And that's what happened. And he doesn't have to do the hard work of actually crafting the policies now. Do you think there's, I mean, is that an accurate assessment? Like, are we actually, like, because I'm trying to kind of get back into it, and then all of the codes have changed, it looks like. So, like, it just seems way more complex than it used to be, which, you know, my lowercase L libertarianism is like, yikes, I'm not really, it seems a bit much, and I wonder if it's actually creating restraint on housing growth, actually. So, but I don't know that to be true.
It's a hugely complicated issue. But yes, I mean, that was one of Bakari's criticism, is that, hey, listen, you're kind of doing the big picture work. And Bakari said this about other people who are in favor of it too, not just Taiwo Jiao, but the planning director. But it's like, but then you're not going to be here to pick up the pieces. You're going to use this so you can say, hey, we reined in developers in Charlotte, North Carolina, a southern city that's been run by developers, and then you're going to move on somewhere else, and we'll be stuck with everything that you're doing. I mean, that was his criticism of it. So whether that's accurate, I mean, he's certainly moving on. But this has always been a process. I mean, this has been a years-long process, and there will be many more years of planning it as well. They passed the 2040 plan, which was sort of the vision document, and now they're in the middle of what's called the Unified Development Ordinance, which is the actual ordinance that will go into place that will set some of these guidelines and some of these rules, and it is very, very complex to understand. It's 600 plus pages, extremely technical, and if you tried to read it, if you were having trouble sleeping at night, just pick up the Unified Development Ordinance. It's extremely dense, and it's hard to understand, and it's hard to understand it in context because you don't really know what's changing. Here's the ordinance. You need to know what the current ordinance is, and it's very technical stuff, stormwater, you know, tree canopy, all these sorts of things. But yes, some of the big questions, if we get to the big themes like you're talking about, it's like, yes, what is this going to do for the price of housing? What is this going to do? Is it going to drive up the price of housing, or is it going to allow more housing to be built so that as Charlotte's growing it? I mean, those are some of the big picture questions, and I don't know that there's I don't know that everybody agrees on the answer.
Right. Well, yeah, and what the policies look like after they're crafted, and then, of course, how do they get implemented? How do they get worked around by savvy lawyers and developer divisions? You know, like how does it actually get applied?
How do they game the system? What are the unintended consequences? You know, are there unintended consequences that some people say are foreseeable? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's all, and you do that throughout the city development codes. I mean, it gets very complicated, and it's hard to know. We probably won't know for a number of years, but
yeah,
I mean, these are the kind of debates that are going on, and it gets very arcane. And people, you start talking about Unified Development Ordinance, you know, people's eyes start glazing over. But it really is important because it's going to determine things like how different neighborhoods grow, what's allowed to be built on major thoroughfares. You know, what can your neighbor build a duplex in your single family neighborhood? I mean, there are like actual concrete things in it that are legitimate policy questions. But it's a lot of that is, you know, like I say, kind of boring and many times hard to understand.
Now, Tony, I think they're called duets now. They're not
duets. That's a new term. Yes, duets.
Duets.
Correct.
Tony Mesilla from the Charlotte Ledger. Go check it out and subscribe if you can. Thanks so much for your time, Tony. We'll have you back on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete. Great talking to you.